And the thing you say for the third day, you see that she had a household thing with Pesach. Yitzchak, because the shofar that was blown at Har Sinai was the shofar from the aisle that Avraham Avinu shechted in Kohen Yitzchak. And Yaakov is sukkahs, because it says in the pasuk in the Mikneh you say sukkahs. That Yaakov made for his sheep, he made sukkahs. He made a pen for his sheep. The pasuk says, Yaakov arrived, Ve'yovah in Bais, he built a house, Ve'oisei sukkahs, Le'mikneh Oisei sukkahs, Al-Kain Kores Amokam sukkahs. And he named the place after the pens. So, the pasuk itself is very difficult to understand. It's perplexing in the extreme. Why name the place after the animal pens? You build yourself a house and you build pens for your animals. You name the place after what's shaykh to you. Well, what's the message Yaakov Avinu is telling us by calling the place sukkahs? And second of all, you name sukkahs, you have shaykhs to sukkahs because of that? Sukkahs, what is sukkahs got to do with putting animals in shelter? It's an interesting machlokes between Rav Yaakov Naiman Zatzal and his Rebbe Rav Rothstein, who's the Mashgiach of the great Yeshiva in Lomza, as to why we lay in Koheles. A fascinating machlokes. Rothstein Zatzal writes that we lay in Koheles on Sukkot because since it's Zman Simcha Seder, a person might get so carried away with his Simcha that he'll go too far. He'll come to Simchas that are not taught, he'll come to Simchas that are not appropriate. And therefore we lay Koheles to put you in your place. Koheles brings you down to earth, puts you in your place. Makes you reevaluate what you're doing. Rav Naaman Zatzal says exactly the opposite. He says without Koheles, a person wouldn't have even Simcha in the first place. Koheles teaches you how to get out of the hell volume of the world. It teaches you how to get out of the gashmis of the world and into Ruch. He says only through Ruch is that a person has any shaykhus to Simcha. So there's a very interesting machlokes between the Rebbe and the Talmud. And I saw, I don't even know who the Mechaber was, I saw a small little kuntras. Small, I don't know, it's 2 pages little kuntras. It says, I'm going to get a trap to reconcile this machlokes. He says, it's not machlokes here at all. The man told him it was machlokes, but we're allowed to perhaps say that there's not machlokes here. What's trap? They're both telling us the same thing. They're both telling us that without Koheles, a person can't be involved in what's called appropriate simcha. Rav Rutschstein Zatzal is saying that without Koheles, the simcha you're going to be involved in is not going to be the correct simcha, and therefore you could come to kalas reish, you could come to inappropriate behavior through your simcha. And Rav Naaman is saying that the same thing. Without Koheles, a person won't know how to get involved in simcha. They're both telling us that the appropriate simcha is what comes out of a true, genuine understanding of what the message of Koheles is. So what is the message of Koheles? Besides the well-known phrase, Hevel Habolim, I call Hevel, that everything in this world, the pursuits, the vanity of the world that we pursue, that we think are so important, are actually nothing. When you get to the end of the day and get the new Palm Pilot, you see that it wasn't as geschmack as you thought it was going to be while you were dreaming about it and saving up for it for 6 months. You find at the end of the road that the things you were pursuing, there was nothing there. It was just a breath of fresh air. But what's the shaykhus really to sukkahs? So perhaps we can answer with the second question. If you understand pshat in the pasuk, and we can know your oisei sukkahs, we might be able to understand what exactly it is that Koheles is coming to tell us and why that is so relevant to sukkahs. The Targum, Rabbi Yonasan ben Uziel, brings down, if you have a look at the pasuk, he says, Ve'yovin, basically drasha. Yaakov didn't build a house for himself. The first thing Yaakov did when he arrived was he built a Bais Midrash, which is true Yaakov tradition. Yaakov, when he's going down to Mitzrayim, the first thing he does is he sends Yehuda down to Mitzrayim to build a Bais Midrash. Because any community, any Jewish community that's going to be built, the first thing you do is have a Bais Midrash. Chazal tell us that had the Jews not left Goshen, they had not left the environs of the Yeshiva, they would have never been Yeshiva. That's why Levi was never enslaved by Mitzrayim, because he was always in the Yeshiva. As long as a person is in the Yeshiva, it's not shaykh to be enslaved by Mitzrayim. So the first thing Yaakov did when he arrived, he was Yovin Bais, and the Loshen is Medayk as well, because it says the Yovin, Binyan. Altikra Bonaif El Bonaif. The builders, what is a builder? You build it by Sidrash. The Oise Sukkos. Oise is from Rosh Nasir, from this world. This world is called Asir. It's a temporary passing world. And that's what a sukkah is. Sukkah is Arai, sukkah is temporary. But the Prophet doesn't say, according to the Targum, that Yaakov built a house for himself. Because he didn't. And if he did it, it's not that he did it. He doesn't mention it, because it's not relevant, it's not important. The house I live in is a place where I need a house. Fine, so you have a house. But that's not what Yaakov Avinu, that's not what goes into the Prophet. What goes into the Prophet is that Yaakov Avinu built a base medrash. And for the flocks, for the animals, he was Oisa Sukkos. Al-Shem Koros Al-Mokum Sukkos. Therefore he called the place Sukkos. Why? As a remnant to what's really important in this world. Know that the only thing that needs a sukkah is your goof. The only thing after your kippah that needs a sukkah is your goof. What am I talking about? When a person comes out of your kippah, his shom is tov. There's been total kapara and a Jewish shom is tov, a kodesh. Where's the goof holding here? There's still a machlok that's going on between the neshama and the goof. The goof needs to come into the sukkah. You need to take the maknehu, the flock, the animals, that needs to come into a sukkah. And come tachas kanfei ashkina. The neshama is already tachas kanfei ashkina. It's the goof that needs to come under the shkina. When the goof comes into the sukkah, you have what Chazal refers to the greatest simcha. When there's a resolution of doubts, that Chazal teaches us is the greatest simcha. David referred to it earlier as well. The doubts and the machlokes that exist the whole year between the neshama and the goof and the struggle and the ordeals that we go through, which detract from the simcha, that gets taken care of on sukkahs, where the goof and the neshama both come tachas kanfei ashkina. Then there's no doubt. Then it's possible who's in charge of what the world is and what a person's tuck in, what a person's job in this world is. And that's the true simcha. The true simcha is that which is planted in the Beis Midrash, which is nourished and flourishes in the Beis Midrash. And the good is then brought in line and aligned with the neshama's ideas. And that is what Sukkos is. Sukkos is bringing the good, tachas kanfei ashkina, bringing all our etzoharas and all our negativity. The entire good, the only mitzvah we do, with the entire goof, you put the whole goof into the sukkah. You don't do the mitzvah of sukkah, you get into the mitzvah of sukkah. So what's appropriate simcha then? Appropriate simcha is taking, say, looking at this and learning it and going through it and getting an attitude to what is important in this world and what's not. What's the attitude to mitzvahs? How important are the mitzvahs to us? Would anybody buy a cell phone in a sealed box? Take your chances. You put 150 shekels on the table and you get a sealed box and inside your cell phone. Could be one of these 4 kilo ones from 8 years ago, could be one of these fancy ones, you don't know. Who? No one would buy it. And if you're quite happy to buy an S-Rod, which is, there's a Kabbalistic Sefer called the Sefer Abayu. No one learns it because it's possibly not understandable. And even if you get the Arya Kaplan translation, you still won't understand it. Kimat, I'm told 3/4 of that Sefer, which is dealing with Maaseh Merkabah, deals with Abayu. So, Abayu is possible stuff. It's not small, it's not large stuff. And if you leave it to chance, I have a time for Abayu, so you get a friend to buy you a box, whatever, and you take it and off you go. That's what Kehillah teaches. Kehillah teaches the correct approach to what we're supposed to be doing. I'm Israel in the 4 days between Yom Kippur and Sukkot. There's no chatoin tzad matzah mitzvah. Why not? Because they're so busy running off the mitzvahs. They're so busy buying lulav and esrog and moving sukkahs and involved in the mitzvahs. That's the attitude that a person is supposed to be walking around with, and that's what comes out of a clear understanding of Sefer Koheles. Hevel ha'valim, I call hevel. Doesn't mean that this world's futile. Doesn't mean that this world's a waste of time. On the contrary, this world is a beautiful, wonderful place to do what you're supposed to do it, but you've got to have the correct attitude to it. But a person has that correct attitude when the guf and the neshama are aligned. That's true simcha. That simcha can't get out of hand. That simcha is totally appropriate because it's a simcha that's rooted in a deep understanding of what a basic mitzvah is and what the Torah is about, and understanding that our attitudes are formed and our scoffers are formed by halacha and by Torah, not the other way around. There's a lot of things. I'm gonna put all of them aside and just focus on Mamushi Yana Jalan in terms of the things. I want to thank Rishipa for once again putting together this whole simple space of forever. It was his idea last year to do it, and he took the whole thing on his shoulders against quite a lot of opposition. And some of you are learning this yeshiva to go in his stomach because of that simple space of forever. And this year he met no opposition. It was possible that we were going to do it. We had to do it. And he buckled down and he took the timer and he went and he did it. And those of you who are earlier, the incredible effort that he put in, him and his family. And a personal debt of gratitude. He should have a debt of gratitude for the enormous effort, not only tonight, but the whole year that he puts in. And I want to thank everybody that helped him and all the work that was putting the music, moving the furniture, putting the furniture back again afterwards. I want to thank all those Kohanim who are going to, you know, take the ashes out of the Beis Midrash, out of the you know, put everything back together again. I want to thank you especially at 2:00 in the morning when you're going to be tired, exhausted, and everything's going to get put back beautifully the way it was before you started. And I want to thank Roberto for taking out of his precious time to join us, to be here with us, and to speak to us. And I'd like to call Roberto with Sophie Woods.
I too want to speak about simcha. How can you not speak about simcha? Why are we so happy now? You walk around town. You walk around town, and here you have intelligent people who generally spend day and night using their brains, studying, getting into the depths of infinite wisdom. And now they spend hours running around in circles and singing and dancing. What's everyone so happy about now? Special mitzvah, the Rambam says, more than any other festival. A special mitzvah, this Chag, on Sukkot, we're supposed to be happy. What makes us so happy? No. I want to ask another question. Because the tour points out that Sukkot should have been Pesach time. We went into the desert right after Kriyas Yamsuf. The seventh day of Pesach is when we commemorate the splitting of the sea. The next day we should be moving into our sukkahs. So the Torah says, yeah, it should have been. But explains that moving into this hut at the beginning of the spring could easily be misunderstood as moving into your summer home, as opposed to moving at the beginning of autumn when the clouds are gathering. There it's clear. If that's the case, that means this is day 9, 10, 11, and so on of Pesach. So how come on Pesach we're celebrating freedom, and on Sukkot we're celebrating joy? What changes from Pesach to Sukkot? What happened after the sea split that gets us so happy? So the good books tell us a secret. and they write that on Pesach we're thankful to Hashem and very thankful to Hashem. We're thankful because He took us from nowhere. We were down in the depths of what's called the Memtes Sharei Tuma. We had no values. Before the sea split, the angels could not understand why there was a differentiation between Jew and Egyptian. Halol Olvei Avodah Zarah, Halol Olvei Avodah Zarah. Two nations of idolatry. They couldn't see a difference. The Torah itself refers to our coming out of Egypt as Hashem taking Goy Mikerev Goy, one nation from within another nation. We didn't merit coming out of Egypt. The festival of Pesach is the time that we express our gratitude for the fact that for no reason other than our being the descendants of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Hashem goes ahead and tears apart every element in nature and delivers the Jews from the Egyptians. It's freedom. It's freedom of our once being servants to the Egyptians and now instead seeing ourselves as subjects of the Creator. We did nothing. We were spectators. Hashem yilachem lachem. Hashem fought the battle. Vatem tacharishim. Just sit by and keep quiet once and for all. Stop complaining. Just watch what Hashem does. That's Pesach. On Pesach, we were spectators. We deserve nothing. We were down in the depths of immorality of Egypt. So the good books say that there was an abrupt change after the splitting of the sea. We did lots of complaining on our way out of Egypt. Just before Kriyas Yamsa, before the sea split, the Jews were saying, "Hamibli ein kvarim b'Mitzrayim, Hashem, why are you taking us out of Egypt to die? What's the matter?" There was a shortage of grave sites in Egypt, a shortage of cemeteries. And that's the way they were talking to Hashem. And what do they get for that? The sea splits. It was all gift. It was all gift. And that's beautiful. But there's a certain emptiness. There's a certain emptiness to an unearned gift. Immediately after the splitting of the sea, we begin the journey through the desert. And as we read through the various episodes in the desert, including the fact that we ended up being there for 40 years, the Jews were once again complaining. They complained in different forms. And they were held responsible for absolutely everything they did wrong. Beginning with the golden calf, going through their complaints about the man, the complaints about what they were missing. And finally, the sending of the spies. They paid for it dearly. There was accountability. There was no accountability before Kriyas Yamsa. This was an abrupt change. The journey through the desert was a journey that we had to earn. And Hashem says, Zocharti lo chesed neurayich, ahavas kulosoyich. He remembers the fact that we trusted Him back in those early days. Lechtech acharai b'midbor be'eretz lo zeruah. We went out there with nothing to the desert. What were we going to eat? We took no food. A couple of leftover matzahs. That's going to sustain us in the journey through the desert. We took no food. We had no water, and we knew there was no water. We took Hashem's word for it. There was a change there. The difference between the first half and the second half is the first was a freebie, and the second was one of accountability. We've just left Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Rosh Hashanah in particular, the festival of judgment, where we celebrate accountability. We're about to start reading Bereishis. So let me tell you a little secret. You all learned Chumash. First pasuk, the first verse in the Chumash, Bereishis Bara Elokim. How do you translate that? In the beginning, Hashem created. Rashi says that that's not pshat. Rashi tells us that if you know anything about Hebrew grammar, the word Bereishis does not mean in the beginning. Doesn't mean that. So Rashi tells us, and remember who Rashi is. Rashi is the one who takes every word of the Chumash and shows us how on a level of pshat, pshat meaning literal translation, but literal if you know your grammar, literal if you're sensitive to the divine language, Lashon Kodesh, Rashi is the one who teaches us how you read with perfect accuracy in order to get that level of message. And Rashi says there is no literal translation to Bereishis Bara Elokim. The pasuk says Dorsheni. The pasuk says on a pshat level you've got to go look for something different. And Rashi explains Bereishis does not mean in the beginning. It means for Reishis. The Beis does not signify when. The Beis signifies why. Bereishis, for the sake of Reishis. And what is Reishis? Says Rashi, and he doesn't quote the entire Midrash because he doesn't feel the rest is pshat. Two things. Bishvil HaTorah Shenikra Reishis and Bishvil Yisrael Anikra Reishis. Bereishis means for the sake of Torah and for the sake of the Jews. According to Rashi, when you open your Chumash, how do you translate Bereishis Bara Elokim? Bereishis means for the sake of Torah and the Jews. Bara was created. But we're not done. Says Rashi, the word Elohim can't just get away and say, oh, that means Hashem. Says Rashi, Elohim is a particular aspect of Hashem. And remember, Rashi is pshat. Rashi is not sold. He's not telling us secrets. Rashi is giving us literal meaning. Says Rashi, the word Elohim signifies Midas Hadin. As opposed to later, when giving the account, later, in retrospect, the Torah talks of the Yom Bro Hashem Elokim, the day that Hashem Elokim created. It doesn't say Hashem Elokim here, it says Elokim. Elokim Midas Hadin, judgment. The God of judgment. Rashi sees that as significant to pshat, to a simple reading, to the most literal reading of Bereishis. Bereishis, for the sake of Torah, for the sake of Jews. Bara Elokim, the God of judgment created. And Rashi explains, Hashem wanted to create the world with judgment, realized it wouldn't last, and then had to add the other name. The Yom Bro Hashem Elokim, the God of mercy. So the Maharal asks, what? Hashem, you see, he thought of it in one way, and he tried, and he realized it wasn't going to work, so he changed his mind. And the Maharal says, no. it is obvious that if the Torah is beginning with this and telling that Hashem created judgment, Midas Adin, there was a creation. The world was created with judgment. And it doesn't say that it was unsuccessful. It says Hashem saw that it could not last. Says the Maharal, the world exists on two levels. It came about by way of Midas Hadin. It is sustained by way of Midas Harachamim. Bereshis Bara Elokim, the first words of the Chumash, ignore the fact that the world can only be sustained by way of Rachamim. It is telling us, Bereshis Bara Elokim, what the world is all about is judgment. Why did Hashem create? Hashem created, we know, Olam Chesed Yibaneh. Hashem created because He is all good and all giving. He's all chesed, overflowing with good. And when Hashem gives, He gives what Hashem gives. And He gives Himself. And what is it that makes Hashem so special? No one else makes Hashem exist. He exists in His own right. And that's really what the name Elohim is all about. The Hashem of judgment means Hashem without mercy. It means Hashem that exists because He's got to exist. Hashem exists because Hashem exists. Because He is reality. And what Hashem gives in creation is the ability for every human being to justify his existence. And how do you justify your existence? And Hashem says, I give you today as a chayim v'satov. I give you life. And what is life? What gives life? Good. As a modest v'sarah, evil gives the opposite. Hashem's creation is Hashem's giving the ability for humanity. Humanity, we are the created. To justify our existence. To exist in our own right. To exist like He does. Midas Hadin. Earn your existence. This is the purpose of creation. And for that there are two elements. The Jews and Torah. The Jews, the ones who do this. We are the recipients of that ability. And the means by which we earn our existence, which is Torah. According to Rashi, that is what Bereshis Bara Elokim means. If you want to know what the world is all about, it is Bereshis Bara Elokim. The world exists in order that the Jews use Torah to earn their own existence. Pesach's nice, but Pesach's cheap. Pesach's beautiful. We don't have a preparation for Pesach where you do tshuva. Perhaps Pesach cleaning does some kind of purification. But we don't read of tshuva before Pesach. Pesach is the beginning of the process. It is an acceptance of Hashem's loving kindness. He is all giving and giving and giving and giving. But there's a certain emptiness. The emptiness, as expressed by the beautiful name Pesach. What does Pesach mean? Jump! Hashem, jump! He jumped! That's the name for a chag. You know, the richness of the word Pesach is the fact that it is so empty. The word Pesach expresses the fact that we earned nothing. The only way of justifying our existence was that Hashem, of His own right, of His own desire, passed over the Jewish homes. The beauty of Pesach is that it's empty. The beauty of Pesach is the fact that Hashem unconditionally was so overflowing with His loving kindness and chose the children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, delivered them miraculously, built them into the Jewish nation, and showed them that all of nature can be torn to bits for the sake of serving them. Okay, now the party's over. Then we go into the desert. And now it's time for the real loving kindness. Bereishis bara Elokim. Pesach was Hashem. Hirsch points out that throughout the Shira Sayam, the Song of the Sea, even when we're talking about what happened to the Egyptians, the name that is used to describe Hashem over and over is the Hashem of mercy, not Elohim. Hashem Ish Milchama. Hashem, the God of mercy. He is the warrior. It was not a matter of judgment. It was not a matter of judging the Egyptians. It was a matter of saving the Jews. The entire festival of Pesach is chesed. The second half, that's a much greater chesed. That is the chesed of the Jew earning. That is the chesed of justifying our existence. And there's nothing like that. We celebrate on Pesach because we're fortunate. We're fortunate that Hashem was so kind to us. We celebrate after Yom Kippur. And then is the appropriate time to commemorate our journey through the desert, because we don't know what happened. We don't know what happened on Rosh Hashanah. Who knows? As the year unfolds, we'll find out how we fared in the court case up there. We don't know. One thing we do know: whatever we got, it was in judgment. Whatever we got was in judgment. And there's nothing more beautiful than that. We've earned. We've paid. We've worked hard. And there's nothing like that. There's no better place to celebrate than the Beis Medrash, where you stay up nights. There's no better place to celebrate than the yeshiva, where you challenge yourselves, where you question your character, where you question your sincerity, where you push yourselves. You celebrate your work. Nesuka shnasa oved, the pasuk says. Sweet is the sleep of the worker. The joy, taking pride in the fact that we work, that we make demands on ourselves, that we recognize that we're accountable. You got to be very mature to be happy about that. But that's real joy. Real joy is not eat, drink, and be merry. Real joy is not getting yourself drunk so you can forget the world and forget your troubles. Real joy is an appreciation of the work ethic. It's an appreciation of the fact that life ain't easy and it's full of challenges, and we're ready for them. And we love them, and we look forward to them, and we look back at how much we've grown, and we're so appreciative. And we thank Hashem for the greatest chesed of all: judgment. Judgment. The Medrash says that Adam on his first day sinned, went into judgment, and walked out with what is called dimus. He was successful. Remember, the decree was the day he eats, he dies. He did become immortal. He became mortal. But he didn't do so bad. He lived for 930 years. So the Medrash says, so too the Jews have a guarantee. They go into judgment on that first day, that same day that Adam was created, and they too walk out bedimus. They walk out successful. And the different svarim are looking for explanations of just what is it that we're guaranteed? What is so great in judgment? I think the answer is very simple. Judgment. The success is the judgment. The fact that we were judged. The fact that we're accountable. The fact that we earn. The fact that we're alive. The fact that we don't just hang out. And that's great. Whether you earned a lot, whether you earned not so much, but whatever you got, you earned. And that's real joy. The real joy of this season is the second half of Pesach. It's the joy post Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. It's the joy of wholesome growth. It's the joy of wholesome living. It's the joy of accountable living. It's real joy. And there's nothing like it. So this is the place. And for Bnei Torah, people who work on themselves, people who know what they were put into this world for, we can be happy. And feel fortunate that we know that. To feel fortunate, Ashreinu Matov Kelkenu, to feel fortunate that we can rejoice judgment. We can go crazy and dance and dance and dance because we're accountable. It's the secret of the Jew. Back in the Beis HaMikdash, they used to sing. They used to sing the songs of tshuva. That's what they were celebrating. And one more little secret to conclude. Sukkot is a time of judgment. The Arba Prakim, the four times a year that we're judged. Rosh Hashanah is one, Sukkot is another. So Rosh Hashanah, we spend the whole day in prayer. And what do we do in Sukkot? We rejoice! Yeah. This is the more difficult tshuva. It's very easy to do tshuva when there's a solemn, heavy-headed atmosphere. When there's a serious atmosphere. The true tshuva is the test of Sukkot. If you can be happy on Sukkot. If you rejoice with judgment. If you rejoice with accountability. You've attained greatness. And then we deserve all the bounty that Hashem has promised. The rains that the Torah repeats over and over come in return for our behaving in accordance with the will of Hashem. The rains, the way Hashem communicates to us His satisfaction with us. We earn that by way of our joy. We earn that by way of understanding that it is not just that judgment is our lot, but judgment is our privilege. Judgment is our life. And that although, in order for humanity to be sustained, there's a need for the Hashem of Rachamim, the God of mercy, the real plan, the real stuff, is judgment, is accountability. Bereishis bara Elohim. We celebrate, we dance, we're successful, we're blessed with bounty, and we begin reading Bereishis bara Elohim. May Hashem accept our joy. It's an offering of joy. May Hashem accept our joy. And see how much we appreciate the fact that He has given us life and the ability to grow, the ability to become better people. Accept that and bless us with a year of bounty and above all, a year of Geulah, growth for the entire humanity.